to talk to those with the eyes to see and the ears to hear. They never were human. I don't see ghosts.
Liar, cackled one in his ear.
Not the way your granddad did. But I've met a couple of people who do. Not an easy gift. My granddad, he was a tough old bird. I guess he was tough even when he was 5 years old and faced down a haunt no one else could see.
Isaac grinned. The sun was down now, and his teeth gleamed in the light of the waxing moon. It was 2 days until full moon.
Tough like me.
Tough and stupid, thought Charles with a sigh.
You're sleeping with the witch?
Isaac smiled whitely.
Yes, sir, and she makes me breakfast in bed, too.
Charles liked this young, tough alpha, so he wanted to warn him.
Black witches are untrustworthy lovers.
I get that, Isaac said. He shook his shoulders to loosen them. I'm a werewolf. I can't afford to be delicate. But I could never fall for a woman who tortures kittens to make love potions, even if she doesn't do it around me.
She's just scratching an itch, and I'm enjoying it while it lasts. And I'm clear with her, that's all it is.
Women hear what men say? Anna said without turning around. That doesn't mean they believe them. A witch isn't anyone to screw with, Isaac. And they get as possessive as any other woman. You're beautiful, strong, and powerful. She's not going to let that go easily.
Are you trying to steal my man?
Hallie didn't seem to have any of the trouble the rest of them did moving about the bouncing boat. And she was good at sneaking around because Charles hadn't noticed that she'd gotten up from her seat to round the opposite side of the console. She still had her satchel and was holding the baggie next to her face as if it held a rose instead of a piece of dead boy's skin. Anna kept a hand on the railing and rolled to sit with only one hip on the ledge at the bow so she could face the witch. His mate smiled, one of her big, generous smiles.
No, just warning him about sleeping with dangerous things. Tigers are rare treasures, and they will eat you and not give it a second thought.
The witch preened, her ire sliding away. His Anna was so good at managing people, him included. It was a good thing that the witch was looking at Anna and not Isaac, because Isaac had clearly heard what Anna had said, too. And when an Omega talked, the wolf listened, no matter what the man thought. Isaac looked like he'd been slapped.
Tigers need to be wary around wolves,
Charles said, to keep her from looking Isaac's way. Hallie narrowed her eyes. She reminded him more of a snake than a tiger. They were beautiful, too. Beautiful and cold survivors, killing with poison rather than fang or claw.
You are sticking your nose into places they don't belong, wolf, she said, as if she thought he ought to be worried about her.
Hallie had overstepped, and so Brother Wolf met her eyes and let her see that they had killed more powerful witches than she was, and that it wouldn't bother them to do it again. She swallowed and stepped back, stumbling when a wave threw her off balance.
You scratch whatever riches you choose,
Charles told her, his voice cold and quiet.
Enjoy yourself, but at the end of the day, you remember that Isaac belongs to my father and to me. He is necessary to us as you are not. You will leave him unharmed, or I will hunt you down and destroy you.
She hissed at him like a cat. When he just stared at her, Hallie scrambled ungracefully around the far side of the console, out of his line of sight. Isaac was watching him, his eyes bright gold, and then he tilted his jaw, exposing his throat. Charles lunged forward and nipped him lightly before releasing him. From the back of the boat, Bokler watched them with inhuman eyes, and Brother Wolf wanted to teach the Fey man respect the way he just put the witch in her place. The moon urged, the ghosts in his head howled, and Charles took a half step away from the gunwale railing.
You made yourself an enemy, Isaac said, his voice quiet and soft, distracting Brother Wolf.
Bokler dropped his eyes at last, and the moment was gone.
She is a black witch, Charles said, equally quietly. We have always been enemies. For right now, we are aimed at the same target. That is all. If your target is pleasure, and you're sure that's what hers is too, that's fine. Just remember, a black witch doesn't love anything but power.
Isaac swallowed and looked away. White witches are just food for the rest. Hallie had a sister who died when she was 16 because she refused to take the black route to power. A big, bad, wicked witch ate her down. Charles nodded.
You can admire the survivor, but Hallie did survive. She'll make sure she always survives. You better make sure that the same is true of you.
The little boat slowed, the engines quieted. The sky was inky except for the silver moon and the thin ribbon of cloud that crossed between them and her.
Here,
said Malcolm unnecessarily. The witch took her satchel and the baggie Goldstein had given her and climbed up the aluminum ladder to the fishing platform above the console. It was the best place to do it, a flat, open surface on a crowded boat. But Charles was sure that the witch knew and enjoyed the fact that the height put her on stage and made the rest of them her audience. Standing on the top of the ladder, Hallie took a small rug out of her pack and laid it out flat. While she was snapping it into place, Charles caught a glimpse of circles and symbols and realized that she'd woven into the rug the protections that a witch would normally have used chalk for. It was a clever thing, something that would save her time and trouble, and also work admirably well on a boat in the rain. Kneeling on the rug, she took out 4 or 5 small pottery jars and set them up as if their placement was important. She did the same with 8 silver candlesticks holding dark-colored candles, probably black candles, but some witches worked with red. She adjusted and moved things around for a while. At last, she set a tall candle in the center of her work. Light, the witch said in an ordinary voice, a half beat before the candles lit themselves despite the salt sea air. The flames on the wicks burned steady and true, though the wind whipped the strands of hair that had worked their way out of his braid. Magic. Her voice hadn't been the trigger. Just a distraction or embellishment. The smoke told his nose what Charles already surmised. There was human blood worked into the candles she burned. The way witches cast spells differed from one witch to the next, depending upon a lot of things, their family background, who their teachers had been, and a little of their own personalities. This one was a wiggler and a moaner, but she did it with all the grace of a talented belly dancer, and her moans were both musical and mesmerizing. Charles felt her magic rain down upon their little boat and found himself agreeing with Isaac's assessment. She was a power. It made him wish that he'd called the White Witch Moira after all. Hallie didn't scare him, but his paranoia didn't like being in the middle of the ocean on a boat with his mate, with a world-class witch who would, as Anna had helpfully pointed out earlier, as soon kill them as not. He intensely disliked being in someone else's power.
If we jumped up there, she'd scream and fall in the water, Brother Wolf assured him, because he didn't like being in her power either. Or we could just kill her and save her the trouble of drowning.
Hallie put the contents of the baggie in a small ivory-colored pot shaped like a toad with big black cartoon eyes, its back open, as if it had been made to hold a candle or a small plant. It fit into the palm of her hand. She pulled a vial out of her bag, pulled a cork stopper out with her teeth, and poured the liquid into the pot. By the smell, Charles knew it was brandy, and not the good stuff. Annie Greensprings, Everclear, or rubbing alcohol would have probably done just as well. Storing the empty vial back in her pack, she held the pot over the flame of the middle candle with both hands and continued her melodic chanting. After a few moments, she slid her hands away, and the pot hung over the candle without moving. She sat back on her heels and lifted her face so that the moon caressed her English pale skin, and slid down her hands, which were shaking feverishly about 3 inches from the pot. Theatrics, designed to hide which were the important bits, in case another witch was watching. Charles started to turn away from the show, but the corner of his eye caught something, and he froze. A shadow thicker than steam slid out of the mouth of the frog. It sank to the rug and grew even thicker and darker, filling the space between the witch and the candles. He glanced around at the others, but no one looked worried or excited, so he supposed he, and Beauclerc, who was slowly rising to his feet, were the only ones who saw the shadow. In the middle of her music, at the height of her dance, the witch stilled and said, "Darkness." The candles and every one of the boat's lights went out. Malcolm swore, dove for his console, and frantically played with the switches. He put a foot on the first rung of the ladder, presumably to go up and confront the witch for meddling with his boat. Malcolm was under Charles's protection, so Charles shoved past Isaac, still watching the witch instead of Malcolm, trusting that the Alpha Wolf would have enough presence of mind not to fall overboard. He caught Malcolm by the shoulder when he was 2 rungs up, pulling him back to the deck. Interrupting a witch was not a good idea for anyone who wanted to survive long. Malcolm wrenched himself free of the unfamiliar hold and snarled. The noise cut off as soon as he saw who it was who'd manhandled him. A dim light began to glow on the top of the fishing platform, distracting both of them. What in? In hell, thought Charles, as the light resolved itself into the 3-dimensional shape of an 8-year-old boy. The smell of the black magic made Charles's earlier seasickness rise with a vengeance, and he moved as far from the center of the boat as he could get. Anna's cold hand closed on his. She was shaking. Not with fear, not his Anna. No. She was shaking with rage. "Tell me this was necessary," she said.
"No,"
Charles answered. He knew Anna didn't mean the witch. She meant the method the witch had chosen. Directional spells were easy. He didn't do them himself, but he had watched them cast. Calling a ghost as a compass was a major spell, a show-off spell, and entirely unnecessary. "Tell me she doesn't get to keep him."
"She won't get to keep him,"
Charles told her. He was no witch, but his grandfather had taught him a thing or two. He might not be able to get rid of his own ghosts because he had to somehow fix himself first, but Jacob Mott, held by black magic, would be no trouble. "All right," Anna said, her voice tight, trusting him to keep his word. "Jacob, I invoke thee," the witch said, her voice like honey rising over the wind and slap of wave. "Jacob, I conjure thee. Jacob, I name thee. Do thou my will." The boy's figure, glowing with silvery moonlight, stood with his back to her, his head bowed, reluctance in every line of his body. But Charles could see his face, and there was no expression at all upon it, and his eyes glowed red as fire. "Where did they kill you, Jacob Mott? Where did they sacrifice your mortal being?" The boy lifted his head, looked south and east, and pointed.
"I can't run without lights," Malcolm said. "It's illegal, for one thing, and I don't want to get caught with candles made with human blood. I don't mind fines, but jail isn't going to happen."
"My magic needs darkness," said the witch in a midnight voice. Beauclerc got out of his seat and touched the rail of the boat. The lights came back on, and the witch turned to glare at him. "Your magic is darkness," said the Fae repressively. "The rest is cheap theatrics." The witch ignored him and put her hands on the shoulders of the boy, caressing him in a not motherly fashion.
"Thanks," said Isaac to the Fae.
Malcolm, his face tight, he had to stand directly under the taint of black magic in order to run the boat, turned the Dacianna. When the direction the boy was indicating lined up with the point of the bow, Isaac said, "That's good." And the Dacianna steadied on course.
Malcolm got busy with his charts and then called out loud enough that people who were not werewolves or fey could hear him over the engine and waves. "Looks like we're headed to Long, George's, or Gallup's Island."
"What do you think?" Isaac asked.
Then, to the rest of them, he said,
"Malcolm makes his living hauling anyone who will pay him out fishing or exploring. He's been doing it for 35 years, and he knows the harbor as well as anyone living."
"Could be any of them, I suppose. George's has a lot of people during the day, which would make me nervous if I was trying to keep live prisoners."
"What about Long Island?" asked Leslie. "It's accessible by car too, right?"
"Right."
Malcolm was quiet. "Long Island has the public health facilities and people who live and work there every day, but there are lots of places no one goes. Places for someone to hide people in, more than either George's or Gallup's. Those old hospital buildings have tunnels going from one to another. There are a few empty buildings, the old concert hall, the chapel, and a couple associated with the old hospital. Fort Strong is falling down and full of good hidey holes. The old Alpha had me lead a couple of full moon hunts out there. We hunted Gallup's, too. Ought to do some more there because there are rabbits doing a lot of damage. As long as no one notices the boats, it would be cool. We don't have to hunt quiet there because it's been quarantined for the past decade. Gallup's has old military buildings full of asbestos and there's no money to clean it."
"Our unsub knows a lot about the local area," Anna noted.
"Always seemed that way to me, too," agreed Goldstein, who had gotten up and worked his way around the boat until he could get a better look at the dead boy who guided their trip. "He does that in most of his hunting grounds, uses the territory more like a native than a traveler." Goldstein stopped and frowned up at the softly glowing boy.
"Is he a ghost?" he asked.
Anna looked at Charles, and everyone else followed suit. The witch looked at him too, and smiled. Charles ignored her and did his best to answer.
"Not his soul. That's gone on. She couldn't have touched it."
He believed that. Believed that the only person who could destroy or taint a soul was the person whose soul it was. Even though his ghosts were laughing as he spoke,
"You tainted us," they told him. "You stole our life and tainted us."
He continued, stoically ignoring the voices of the dead.
"A ghost is the little left-behind bits collected together. Memories held in buildings or things, and here by flesh and hair."
"It's not really the boy?"
asked Leslie Fisher. And from the tone of her voice, if he said yes, she would have shot Hallie without a second thought.
"No, more like a sweater that he wore and discarded,"
Charles told her. The red eyes, he was pretty sure, were caused by some aspect of the witch's magic. Leslie looked at him, and he thought that if she looked at her children that way, they would squirm. Then she nodded her head and made her way to the rear of the boat and sat next to Beauclerk instead of the backward-facing seats behind the console that would have left her back to the witch. He didn't blame her. After a while, Malcolm said,
"It's not Long Island or George's. We're either going to Gallup's or someplace along the coastline."
"It's not the coast," said the witch, lifting her face to the night sky. "Don't you feel it? It's glorious. They must be amateurs to leave such a feast behind unconsumed."
She smiled, and it was a terrible smile, because it made her look so sweet and young. And the cause of the smile was the death of Jacob Mott and others before him.
"It is too bad that so many of us, so many witches, are afraid of water," Hallie said to Charles. "Otherwise we'd have known about this a long time ago. They've used this more than just this season."
The hunter had hit Boston twice, Charles remembered.
"If this were springtime, we'd have trouble accessing Gallup's," said Malcolm. "As it is, there's some docks that are still usable. I'll take us around." We know where we're going, said Charles to the witch. Release the boy.
I thought he was just a collection of memories,
she murmured.
Just an old sweater, discarded when Jacob died.
Charles jumped to the top of the railing of the fishing platform and bent his knees, balancing with the sudden lurch the force of his jump had caused, and then settling more comfortably as the rise and fall of the boat steadied to the ocean's hand. He caught the witch's eyes, and bringing Brother Wolf and all of his power to the fore, said, Let him go. She obeyed before she thought, his sudden appearance and the force of his order dictating her actions. She dismissed the ghost with a flick of her power. Then her jaw dropped in outrage, and magic gathered around her.
Don't,
said Charles, before she could complete whatever mischief came to mind.
You won't like what happens.
He hopped down beside her and picked up the little frog pot. The sickly magic residue tried to crawl onto his fingers, but flinched back from Brother Wolf's presence at the last moment. His instinct said that whatever ties the contents of the pot had to Jacob were gone, used up, and that was good enough for him. He tossed the frog out over the side of the boat, making sure that it spun upside down and scattered its contents as it fell. She hissed and flung something that slid off him like water. Charles shook his head.
Do you think I would have survived this long if some hastily constructed spell could harm me?
It wasn't a lie. He was just asking her a question. If her answer was the wrong one, it was not his fault. Half of his reputation rested on stories people told about him. He'd been lucky. He wore some protections, and being a werewolf was another kind of protection. But no one was invulnerable. The secret of being safe from magic was to make people think it was useless to attack him by that method. Charles swung back over the platform railing and landed lightly on the deck below. He took a seat on one of the benches that served as bait containers near the bow, and his mate scooted over and sat on his lap. Anna kissed his jawline, and he felt the ghost's predatory rumblings.
Closer, bring her closer, they said, cackling. We shall eat her and share her among us.
Mine, answered Brother Wolf.
He tightened his arms around her when Charles would have sent her to safety. But Brother Wolf held her and stared at the moon, who sang serenely to him. Charles jumped out with one of the dock lines as soon as the boat was near. The wooden platform felt sturdy under his boots, and the cleat he tied his line off to looked new. He asked Malcolm about it as the others disembarked.
The Parks Department comes out and they need somewhere to tie up their boats, don't they?
Asked Malcolm rhetorically.
So they keep the dock up.
Stick together, said Charles. Malcolm, your job is to keep our FBI agents safe.
Leslie drew in a breath, but Goldstein held up a hand.
You and I can't see in the dark if our flashlights give out. There's a moon out right now, but given the clouds in the sky, that could change. We are slower and more vulnerable than they are. And if this is the killing ground, then someone might be here to guard their latest victim.
Leslie pulled out her gun, checked to make sure it was loaded, and then put it back in her shoulder holster.
If you can manage without flashlights, Charles told them, it will help the rest of us keep our night vision. But don't risk a broken ankle. I don't know how well you can see. We wolves can see just fine in the dark. Most witches have a trick or two.
He glanced at Beauclerc. The Fae nodded. I can see fine.
So it's up to you. If you use the flashlights, please try not to shine them in our eyes.
I have a question, said Leslie. If you can see in the dark, why did Malcolm say he needed lights to find the island?
Because I'm not taking a boat that has parts not working into waters that aren't safe, Malcolm said. There's some pretty nasty places around here if you don't know where you are. And her spell killed all of my instrumentation lights, GPS, depth finders, the whole kit and caboodle.
The witch smiled at them all.
Are you still talking?
Isaac touched her shoulder.
Lead the way, Hallie.
The Fae followed Isaac and his witch, her pale skin standing out in the darkness like a candle in the night. The FBI agents followed the witch, with Malcolm trailing them. That left Charles and Anna to take the rear guard. Castle Island had been park-like, with carefully planted trees and bushes. Gallops was more like a jungle, not quite as dense as the temperate rainforest near Seattle, but the undergrowth could have used a machete or two to clear it out. Perforce, they followed paths that had once been sidewalks or narrow roads before nature had started to reclaim them. Mostly, they walked uphill. From what he'd seen on the water, the whole island was mostly one long, narrow hill. It wasn't very big, less than 40 acres, he thought. It wouldn't take them long to find the place where Jacob had been killed, as long as the witch was telling the truth, that she could feel it. Anna pointed out the cornerstone of a house and what was undoubtedly originally a planted hedge of roses that had gone wild. He pointed out some poison ivy and a pair of curious rabbits who weren't at all scared of them. Any hunt on this island would be boring if they were hunting rabbits. The whole thing stank of black magic. If he'd been trying to find the center on his own, he'd have had to crisscross the whole island and hope he'd stumble into it. As much as he hated to admit it, the witch had been right. Only amateurs would leave this much power residue behind. After they were done here, he'd have to talk to his father about how to clean it up. This much tainted power was more troublesome than asbestos. People would get sick here and die from colds. They would scratch themselves on a thorn bush and die from the resultant infection. They would kill themselves from a despair they would never otherwise have felt. This much residue would also attract dark things. And in the ocean, there were some very bad things who might decide to come ashore for the kind of invitation the island was sending out. And the worst part was that there were more places like this, everywhere the killers had struck over the years. Sally Riley, Caitlin the witch had said when she identified the marks the killers left on their victims. It made sense. He hadn't ever met Sally, but his father had made a point of attending one of her demonstrations and had come back shaking his head and sent Charles out to do research. Back then, it had been more foot and phone work than computer work. After talking to her father, her mother was dead, some old friends and a couple of witches, he'd returned to Bran with a report. Sally wasn't a hack or an amateur, but rather a skilled witch. She'd broken with her family and decided to turn the heat up, maybe cause another witch hunt, a hunt that she intended to protect herself from by money she gained while she was busy convincing the television-watching public that witches were real. He'd told Bran that they needed to stop her, and then she'd quit trying to publicize witches. Instead, she'd started charging rich people large fortunes for her work. She disappeared altogether sometime in the early 1990s, but he'd always supposed that she had retired, until Caitlin the witch had been so utterly convinced that Sally Riley was dead. It would have been just like Sally to do something like agree to work up a spell that would leave a residue like this, one with incorrect symbols maybe, while she charged them through the nose for it, thinking them fools who intended to kill chickens or goats. Had they killed her? The timing was right. And if they'd paid a witch for a spell to let them feed from people they killed, they'd have felt the need to get rid of her, since she was a witness they wouldn't have wanted. And serial killers didn't stay free and killing for this many years without being smart enough to take care of witnesses. Charles let his hand linger on Anna's back. She wore a sweater and a light jacket, but he pretended he could feel the heat of her through the clothing that covered her. Brother Wolf wanted her off this island and somewhere far away from killers who hunted werewolves and left no scent behind for them to discover. But Charles knew better. To try to encase his Anna in bubble wrap would be to kill the woman who protected him with her grandmother's marble rolling pin. She was the woman he fell in love with.
"Then why are you hiding your ghosts from her?" Brother Wolf said.
Because I am afraid, Charles answered his brother, as he would have answered no one else. He had lived a very long time, and only since he gained Anna had he learned to fear. He'd discovered that he had never been brave before, just indifferent. She had taught him that to be brave, you have to fear losing something.
I am afraid I will lose her, that they will take her from me, or that I will drive her away when she sees what I really am.
Beauclerc had addressed that. Charles couldn't remember the Fae's exact words, but he felt them. People as old and powerful as he should never be given someone to love. For Anna, he would destroy the world. Anna felt Charles more than heard him, even though he'd taken his hand off her back and let her go ahead. She could hear the others walking in front of her, but Charles was a silent, reassuring presence behind. She could smell the wrongness in the air, and it made her wolf nervous. It felt like someone was watching them, as if the wrongness had an intelligence, and it didn't help to remember that at least one of the people they were hunting could hide from their senses. Anna fought the urge to turn around, to take Charles's hand or slide under his arm and let his presence drive away the wrongness. Once she would have, but now she had the uneasy feeling that he might back away, as he almost had when she sat on his lap in the boat before Brother Wolf had taken over. Maybe he was just tired of her. She had been telling everyone that there was something wrong with him, but Bran knew his son and thought the problem was her. Bran was smart and perceptive. She ought to have considered that he was right. Charles was old. He'd seen and experienced so much. Next to him, she was just a child. His wolf had chosen her without consulting Charles at all. Maybe he'd have preferred someone who knew more, someone beautiful and clever who...
Anna, said Charles. What's wrong? Are you crying?
He moved in front of her and stopped, forcing her to stop walking too. She opened her mouth, and his fingers touched her wet cheeks.
Anna,
he said, his body going still.
Call on your wolf.
You should have someone stronger, she told him, miserably. Someone who could help you when you need it, instead of getting sent home because I can't endure what you have to do. If I weren't Omega, if I were dominant like Sage, I could have helped you.
There is no one stronger, Charles told her. It's the taint from the black magic. Call your wolf.
You don't want me anymore,
she whispered. And once the words were out, she knew they were true. He would say the things that he thought she wanted to hear because he was a kind man, but they would be lies. The truth was in the way he closed down the bond between them, so she wouldn't hear things that would hurt her. Charles was a dominant wolf, and dominant wolves were driven to protect those weaker than themselves, and he saw her as so much weaker.
I love you, he told her. Now call your wolf.
She ignored his order. He knew better than to give her orders. He said he loved her. It sounded like the truth, but he was old and clever, and Anna knew that when push came to shove, he could lie and make anyone believe it. Knew it because he lied to her now, and it sounded like the truth.
I'm sorry, she told him. I'll go away.
And suddenly her back was against a tree, and his face was a hair breadth from hers. His long, hot body was pressed against her from her knees to her chest. He'd have to bend to do that. He was a lot taller than her, though she wasn't short. Anna shuddered as the warmth of his body started to penetrate the cold that had swallowed hers. Charles waited like a hunter, waited for her to wiggle and see that she was truly trapped, waited while she caught her breath, waited until she looked into his eyes. Then he snarled at her.
You are not leaving me.
It was an order, and she didn't have to follow anyone's orders. That was part of being Omega instead of a regular werewolf, who might have had a snowball's chance in hell of being a proper mate.
You need someone stronger,
Anna told him again, so you wouldn't have to hide when you're hurt.
so you could trust your mate to take care of herself and help, damn it, instead of having to protect me from whatever you were hiding.
She hated crying. Tears were weaknesses that could be exploited, and they never solved a damn thing. Sobs gathered in her chest like a rushing tide, and she needed to get away from him before she broke. Instead of fighting his grip, she tried to slide out of it.
I need to go, she said to his chest. I need...
His mouth closed over hers, hot and hungry, warming her mouth as his body warmed her body.
Me, Charles said, his voice dark and gravelly, as if it had traveled up from the bottom of the earth, his eyes a bright gold. You need me.
He kissed her again, his hands roaming from her jaw down her neck and shoulders, his hips pressed forward, and he released her mouth as he slid his body up until his sex pressed hard and full against hers. She jerked involuntarily, and he laughed in the same deep way that he had spoken. She growled at him, wolf to wolf.
There you are, there you are, he said. Are you just going to let me do this alone?
He was talking too much when he should be feeling. She curled one leg up until the angle of their hips was better, climbing his body until she could bite down on his collarbone. He drew in his breath at the pain, and she released him. Now his attention was on her instead of on making words, so she could be gentler. She licked the wound she'd made, feeling it heal under her tongue as she cleaned the iron-rich blood from his skin. She lunged upward, and this time she caught the tendon in his neck gently, and his gasp had nothing to do with pain. She wiggled her hips, rubbing the seam of her jeans on him as she absorbed the heady smell that was her mate when he was aroused. She wanted to smell it better, so she slipped down and rested her open mouth against his hardness, letting her hot breath caress him through his jeans. It had been so long since they'd touched. His scent grew stronger, musk and forest, salt and bitter, with an indescribably delicious edge of sweetness.
Anna, he said, a little desperately. Isaac, Malcolm, and probably that damned Fay can hear us.
She opened her mouth and bit.
Not hard, just enough to shut him up and to let him know that pushing her away was not an option.
Charles made a noise that might have been a laugh, but all she heard was the surrender in it. And then he let her knock him onto his back in the damp soil of the island and unzip his jeans until she could get to him. Once she had his bare skin in her hands, the frantic need lessened, partly assuaged by the clear evidence that he wanted her as much as she wanted him. His skin was so soft to sheathe something so hard. She licked him delicately, loving the taste of him now seasoned by the ocean salt. She loved him in all of his flavors, loved the noises he made as she pleasured him, loved the catch in his breath and the jerkiness of his movements, he who was always graceful. She swallowed him down, claiming him, man and wolf, in the most basic way possible.
I am yours, he said,
a finger under her chin dislodging her claim.
And you?
He moved his hands under her shoulders and pulled until she was all the way on top.
Are mine.
Her jeans were in the way, so he rolled her to the side and stripped her shoes, pants, and underwear off in three quick motions. He pulled her back on top with his hands that were more urgent than gentle and slid inside her. She closed her eyes and absorbed the feel of the slow burn, the slick pressure and warm friction that meant he was hers. Then he grabbed her hips and asked, so she moved, and quit thinking altogether. Limp and well-loved, Anna panted on top of Charles. As the last tingles died down, she started to think again, instead of just feel.
Did we...
she whispered, feeling the blush start at her toes and travel all the way out to her ears.
Did we really make love while everyone was listening? Right out in the open? When there might be a bad guy we can't see or hear watching?
She might have squeaked the last word. Underneath her, Charles laughed, his belly bouncing her up and down. He felt resilient and relaxed, like a cat bathing in the sun.
All I was trying to do was get you to call up your wolf so she could fight off the black magic that was making you doubt yourself.
He paused, and the relaxation faded.
Making you doubt me.
He rubbed her back.
I made you doubt me.
Anna tucked her head in the hollow of his shoulder and closed her eyes, but hiding didn't work. After a minute, she laughed helplessly. There is no saving it, is there? We might as well go face the music. Anna sat up and lifted her head to scent the air. All she smelled was green growing things, Charles, sex, and the ocean air. The wrongness is gone, she told him. He frowned and closed his eyes, breathing in deeply.
From here, he said. Not from the whole island. That's interesting.
Then he looked up at her and smiled.
I think we'd better pull ourselves back together. They're waiting for us.
Anna stood up and he handed her his t-shirt. She cleaned up as best she could, handed him back his shirt, and then climbed back into her clothes. He was faster, since he had only to zip his jeans. She was brushing the dirt off one of her socks when he took the shirt and pressed it against a tree. She watched him as she put on a shoe and started dusting off another shoe. Charles murmured to the tree, in what she was pretty sure was his native speech, which he very seldom used. He and Bran were the only ones left who spoke it, as his mother's band of people had used it, a variant of the flathead tongue. It made him feel sad and alone to use it, he told her once, and he and his father communicated quite nicely in English, Welsh, or any number of other languages. Clothed and shod, she ran her fingers through her hair to dislodge leaves, grass, mud, and whatever creepy crawlies might have come to rest there. Charles went down to one knee and pressed the shirt into the ground, which ate it. He murmured one more phrase and came back to his feet. He saw her watching him and smiled, his face more open than she'd seen it in a long time.
I wasn't going to put it back on, he explained, and leaving something like that lying around when we're traveling with a witch is just not smart. The apple tree will absorb it eventually and guard it until she does.
Are you done yet?
Called Isaac. Charles tilted his head and called back,
I suppose that's why they call you the 5-minute wonder.
Anna could feel her eyes round and her mouth drop open. I can't believe you just said that. She paused and reconsidered. I am so telling Samuel you said that. Charles smiled, kissed her gently, and said,
Samuel won't believe you.
Then he took her by the hand and started off in the other's wake. Chapter 9. As they climbed, scrambling over broken cement, rocks, and bits of assorted underbrush, Anna had too much time to think about the show they'd just put on. It had been her fault. Charles had been trying to raise her wolf, because apparently the black magic had been affecting her. She cringed away from the self-pitying stupidity she'd allowed herself to wallow in. Talking hadn't worked to pull her out of it, so he'd kissed her, and her wolf had risen up to shrug off the effects of the magic, just like he'd thought she would. And then her wolf had changed the game. Anna remembered distinctly that he'd warned her that they had an audience, and she'd totally ignored him. That was bad enough. To do it when there was a distinct chance that they were going to run into the bad guys was the height of stupidity.
Anna,
said Charles,
stop brooding.
That was really dumb, she said without looking at him. My fault. I'm sorry. We could have been attacked by the killers. She threw up her hands. We might as well have set up cameras and invited everyone to watch. And now we're going to have to go meet up with our audience and explain ourselves. He stopped abruptly and jerked her to a halt beside him with a hand on her wrist. It startled her with its hint of violence. Charles was never out of control.
If you think that it was dumb, unnecessary, and your fault, he said in a husky voice, then you weren't paying attention.
He kissed her again, his mouth demanding her response, his body hot against hers. Charles smelled like home, warm and right,
She knew she should pull back, knew that this was more distraction they couldn't afford. But she was so hungry for him, not just for sex, but for the simple touches, the absolute certainty of knowing she was welcome to pet and tease and laugh. Anna sank into him and gave as good as she got. They were both breathless when he pulled back.
"When we get back tonight, we will talk," he told her. "I just learned something."
"That my wolf is shameless?" she muttered, though she couldn't pull away. He laughed, damn him, more of a huff than a chuckle, but she knew amusement when she heard it. She'd thrown him down in the middle of a hunt when there were a herd of people listening in. All the werewolves, he'd reminded her, and Bokler, who was here to find his daughter, not to listen to her make out in the woods. And now, to show that she hadn't learned her lesson, all she wanted to do was take up that last kiss where it had left off. "No help for it," Anna muttered. "Time to face the music."
"Shame is not a very productive emotion," Charles told her.
There was a funny little pause when he tilted his head to look at her face, and then away.
"Brother Wolf liked claiming you in front of the others, so that there will be no question who you belong to. While I regret your embarrassment, but otherwise agree with Brother Wolf."
Anna stared at him incredulously. If there was a more private man in the world than her husband, she hadn't met him.
"As for the other,"
Charles grinned rather fiercely at her and raised his voice.
"Isaac, go on ahead, we'll follow."
"You're the man,"
Isaac called back.
"We'll trail them closely," Charles said. "If something happens, we'll be right there. But if we wait until there are more interesting things about than we are, they won't give you a hard time."
He didn't need to say that no one would give him a hard time. "Thanks," Anna said, not knowing how else to respond. He put his hand on her shoulder as they started back up the trail. While they hiked, there was none of the reluctance to touch her that had characterized him for the past few months. He kept a hand on whatever part of her was closest to him. Charles had tried to open their bond and call up her wolf to defeat the black magic and hadn't been able to. Brother Wolf had panicked because Charles had somehow messed up their bond, and then Anna threatened to leave them, and Charles had panicked too. If she hadn't allowed them to make love to her, to reestablish their claim, things might have gotten interesting, in the same way that a grizzly attack is interesting, because neither he nor Brother Wolf was capable of letting her go. It had been something of a revelation. The bottom line was that he was a selfish creature, Charles decided more cheerfully than he'd been about anything in a long time. He guided Anna around a hole in the ground with a subtle push of his hand on her hip. She probably had seen the hole, but it pleased him to take care of her in such a small way. He was willing to pay any price to keep her safe. Any price, except for losing her. When they got back to the condo, he would tell her about the ghosts who threatened to kill all that he loved unless he could find the key to releasing them. It was a risk, but quite clearly, he had damaged their mate bond by trying to do this alone. And that was worth any risk to fix. He'd see if, between the two of them, they could mend what he'd broken. And if not, he'd call his Da. If this trip had done nothing else, it had given him distance from the unrelenting grimness that his life had become since the werewolves had revealed themselves to the public. He'd been so focused on duty, on need, and on just getting the job done that he'd lost perspective. Honor, duty, and love. He would not sacrifice Anna for his father and all the other werewolves in existence. Given a choice, he chose love. That meant he had to find a way to deal with the ghosts, or quit being his father's hatchet man. It wasn't the result his father had been hoping for from this trip, but Charles couldn't help that. He would not lose Anna, even if it meant they went to war with the human population. The decision left him feeling oddly peaceful, if more than a little selfish.
"We found it,"
Isaac called.
Charles started jogging, and Anna stayed by his side, just where she belonged.
The place where the others awaited them had once been a yard, with a small house or storage shed, maybe 10 feet by 15, in the center.
The wooden part of the structure was long gone, but the granite foundation blocks were still in situ. The eye bolt that was driven into one of the blocks might have been original, but the chain and cuffs attached to it were bright and shiny new. Beauclerc was standing in the center of the foundation, his eyes closed and his lips moving. Charles was pretty sure he was working some magic, but with the feel of the blood magic that had already been done here clogging his senses, he couldn't tell. Along the perimeter of the clearing, Malcolm trailed after the FBI agents, who were busily using their flashlights to examine the ground for clues or a trail.
"We'll have to come back in daylight with a team," Goldstein said, and there was a hard edge to his voice. "We shouldn't be tromping around here at night. We're going to miss or destroy clues."
"You aren't going to get Beauclerc to leave without his daughter," said Leslie. Then she glanced back at the werewolf behind them and stepped a little closer to Goldstein. Charles took a good look at Malcolm himself.
"Malcolm,"
he said sharply. The bearded werewolf looked up.
"You told me to watch them."
Isaac had been in a low-voiced conversation with his witch, but when Charles spoke, he looked over too.
"Malcolm?"
he asked, his voice too gentle. The other wolf sighed and drifted a little farther away from the FBI agents, but also shifted his body language from stalker to bodyguard. Charles wasn't sure that the humans could consciously read body language well enough to tell the difference, but their hindbrains could. As soon as Malcolm started to behave himself, Leslie's shoulders relaxed, and she quit patting her thigh with her right hand. Isaac left the witch kneeling beside the chains, her fingers tracing spells that left little red glowing lines behind them.
"Hallie says that there were 10 or 12 people killed here over a period of years," he told Charles. "She says that she'll gather some of her apprentices, and they'll put the island to rights after the police have gathered their evidence. She's doing what she can now. We don't want a herd of armed people in a place that has such a strong, dark magic residue. The words accidental shootings don't even begin to cover the disasters that could spring up."
"Good,"
said Charles. That was one less thing for him to worry about.
"Any sign of Lizzie?"
"Not right here. No one alive but us and some rabbits within hearing range, and there aren't any trails into or out of this place. I can't smell anyone but us in the vicinity. Maybe if I were in wolf form, I could do better."
"We'll all change to hunt for the girl. Except Malcolm, if he can help it,"
Charles said. "I can help it," Malcolm sounded a little put out to be left behind.
"We need you to be able to take us back to the mainland in a hurry when we find Lizzie," Charles explained. "She's gonna need medical attention as soon as possible. It's not just guard duty."
"You believe Lizzie is here?" Beauclerc said sharply, leaving off his spellcasting. "Can you smell her? Do you have proof?" Charles waved his hand at the stone.
"They've used this place to kill all of their local victims once they are through with them. Do you think that they found a better place than this isolated and quarantined island to keep their victims while they are still alive?"
The Fae stared at him, his face hungry. "How do you propose finding her? If she were here, I would be able to find her, but my magic doesn't tell me anything. It hasn't from the beginning." His voice dropped to a whisper. "I thought it meant that she was dead." "I know a few ways to stymie Fae magic," said the witch, without pausing in whatever she was doing to the granite stone. "The Irish and German witches are well known for their ability to disrupt your kind of power, one way or another. And Caitlin told me that this guy got his rune spell from an Irish witch. There's a dozen ways to make charms that I know, some more effective than others." Beauclerc looked at her, face taut with hope. "There are," he said. "There are indeed." Isaac started stripping off his clothes, and so did Anna. Charles moved until he stood between them, in answer to a small fit of territoriality and unfounded jealousy. Brother Wolf was feeling possessive tonight. Not bothering to take off his jeans, he began his change. It was harder this time, because he'd been changing a lot today, and the last time he'd pushed for speed. His shift was slower, and it hurt more, leaving him with the dull ache in his bones that told him he would pay for the next change back to human. If he could, he'd wait until they got back to their condo before attempting it. He still managed the full change before the others, and was shaking the tingles and cramps out of his muscles when Isaac staggered to his feet, a wolf of medium height and a gold coat that reminded Charles of Brand's mate, Leah. Anna was still changing. Charles left the others to recover and started to explore the ground with his nose. Like the FBI agents, he concentrated his efforts along the edge of the clearing. He found nothing on his first pass, or his second, and was starting a third, Bokler pacing attentively by his side, a hand on the long knife he wore in a sheath on his belt, a knife Charles didn't remember seeing on the boat, when Anna called him over with a couple of demanding yips. He took his time, casting around where Anna stood, but he scented nothing, not even the ubiquitous rabbits and mice. She whined at him when he lifted his head, and he tried again. The second time he lifted his head, she yipped and started trailing something he couldn't smell. Frustrated at his inability to perceive what she had, doubly frustrated because if he hadn't messed up their bond somehow, she could have told him what she found, Charles stalked after her, with Isaac and Bokler following. Probably because he was so annoyed, it took him about 15 feet to figure it out. Nothing. He smelled nothing. As if something that disguised scent had trailed by here many times. He smelled absolutely nothing. His mate was very smart. He touched his nose to hers to let her know he understood. She smiled at him, her tongue lolling happily between sharp, white fangs. "Wait," said the witch. Charles stopped and looked at her. "Isaac said that you won't be able to see or hear this fae you were chasing." Charles gave Isaac a dark look. He'd told Isaac what they were hunting when he'd called him for help tonight. That information had not been for general distribution, and the Alpha Wolf had known it. "Peace," the witch said. "Isaac only told me because I was putting myself at risk in coming here, and he knows that I do not talk. This fae has been eating the essences of the people who died here, and that Isaac did not need to tell me. I talked to Caitlin about the nature of the magic they were using. So, I can give you some of that power, and it will recognize the fae. Sympathetic magic, Wolf, like to like. There is enough to give it to only one of you." Charles flattened his ears at Isaac when that wolf would have stepped up. If there was a risk, it was for Charles to take. Of them all, he was the one with the best chance of taking on the enemy. He trotted over to the witch and waited for a lot of smoke and dramatic gestures and dancing. Instead, she simply bent until her face was level with his and blew on him. He coughed and then choked and gagged at the smell. It hurt, too, like getting stung by 1,000 bees at once or leaping from a car onto asphalt that shredded the skin off of him, both of which he'd done before. But that wasn't the worst of it. It felt like used motor oil had been poured over his body and clung there, smelly and greasy. Brother Wolf growled and hung his head low, his ears pinned. Isaac whined and took a step forward, as if he might try to get between Charles and the witch. The ghosts inside of him began howling and laughing. Then Anna brushed up against Charles, silencing the voices inside with a radiant peace, the gift of the Omega, that let him regain control. Only then did the witch move. She stood up and dusted her hands briskly. "My apologies. I didn't know that it would affect you so adversely. It will stay on you until dawn dispels it, and likely it will only be enough for a quick warning. So pay attention." Calmer now, if not more comfortable, Charles nodded his thanks. It was not her fault that it hurt, or that it made him long to go jump in the ocean to clean the oily filth of it off his fur, or that she gave him orders, because Isaac hadn't taught her any better. The spell, if it worked, as she said it would, allowed them a chance if they ran into the fae. For that, he could forgive her a great deal.
Hallie the witch stood before him unafraid, and so fragile in her humanity. She could not help being a witch any more than he could help being a werewolf, both of them born to their otherness. Isaac was right that most white witches died while still very young, unable to defend themselves from their blood magic using kin. She had, within the limits of what she was, been very helpful, and he would remember it. The wolves and the fae left the others behind to the dubious safety of the little clearing and the guardianship of Malcolm and the witch. Charles let the other wolves take the lead, as his nose was not at its best under the burden of the spell the witch had used. They traveled slowly because it was more difficult to follow no scent than it was to trail any given odor. Isaac picked up on what they were doing after a few hundred feet, and his nose was better than Anna's, but Anna caught him once when he'd taken a false trail. Eventually, their noses led them to a door, rough set in cement, that seemed to be attached to the side of the hill. Charles ran uphill to the top of the cement, where it was capped by a crude roof, about 2 feet by 3 feet. A possible entrance or exit if they needed it, he thought, but better if they went through the door. The door, when he ran back down to study it, looked as if it had been purchased used and rehung on new hinges. It was locked with a steel bolt-lock latch. Steel wasn't as damaging to Fae, he'd been told, as iron, but it would still resist any magic Bokler could bring to bear. The Fae had evidently had the same thought. He stood up from where he'd been scrounging in the bushes with a big hunk of stone in one hand. He muttered a few words until the stone glowed mud green, and then chucked it at the door. It hit with a bang more reminiscent of a grenade than a rock, and shattered into dust, leaving a good-sized dent in the door. Neither the lock nor the latch survived the encounter. The doorknob was aluminum, and didn't seem to give Bokler any trouble opening it. Inside it was pitch black, but even so Charles could tell that it was far deeper than the 2-foot by 3-foot roof would have indicated. Someone had burrowed into the side of the hill. All of this he sensed from the way the chamber echoed, not from anything he could see. Even a wolf needed some light to see by. The air smelled fresh, so there was either another entrance or some sort of ventilation. Charles couldn't smell anything dangerous, but under the circumstances, he wasn't willing to trust his nose alone to warn him of danger. The Fae Lord solved the light problem by throwing a ball of glowing magic through the doorway and into the darkness within. It stopped before it hit the dirt floor, hovering about 3 feet off the ground, 6 or 8 feet ahead of them, lighting a space that looked as if it had begun life as the basement of a large building, maybe part of an old military building. A large number of the islands in Boston Harbor had had military installations at one time or another over the last 400 years.
"There?"
whispered a slurred voice as they stood just past the entryway. It was such a soft voice, coming from an empty room. All of them froze in place.
"Help me, please."
Her voice was so quiet, a human would never have heard her. The effect on Bokler was electric. "Lizzie!" he thundered, poised to run, head cocked, trying to figure out where her voice came from. The room didn't have any doors, was barren of everything except a scattering of debris. It obviously did not hold Lizzie Bokler.
"Papa?"
Her voice didn't get stronger. It sounded querulous and hopeless. Isaac had been cautiously exploring the dark edges of the room, and he made a soft grunt to attract their attention. Behind a pile of rotted timbers, pipes, and broken granite blocks, what Charles had thought was just a dark shadow or more debris turned out to be a narrow cement stairway with holes and rusted metal fittings where there would once have been a handrail. One side, the side with the rusty fittings, ran along the wall of the room. The other was open. Bokler, his light leading the way, scrambled down the stairs and left the rest to follow. Not the smartest idea in the world, thought Charles, but he understood. If it had been someone who belonged to him below, He'd have lost no time in getting to her either. The phase ball of light revealed a room nearly half as big as the one above, with a doorway on the far wall. The door was long gone, and one of the uprights of the doorframe had tipped over and lay on the floor. Bokler stopped momentarily at the foot of the stairs. Lizzie had quit making noise. When he started forward again, his initial rush had slowed, and he moved cautiously, aiming for the open doorway because the sub-basement was obviously empty. Only it wasn't. Charles paused, still 6 or 8 steps from the bottom of the stairs. There was a scattering of fine gold sparks, like a constellation in miniature. "Pay attention," the witch had said. He might not have noticed them if they hadn't moved. But once he did, they did a pretty good job of telling Charles a little something about the Fae they were stalking. The Horned Lord, if that's what it was big. The ceiling of the sub-basement was 9, maybe 10 feet high, and the little sparks started right at the top and took up a fair chunk of the corner of the room it stood in. He didn't get any details, but he knew it was there. Charles wished he'd thought to ask Bokler what the Horned Lord looked like in its original shape. Even knowing whether it stood on 2 legs or 4